You're listening to the Blatantly Blunt podcast series, six of the best, only on Kiki.
Six of the Best is an exploration into the inspirations of the songs and albums which inspired and defined our guests. The six-part rundown consists of three of the releases which gave them the inspiration and defined their years growing up, as well as three songs of their own, which defines their own musical identity. Today's guest is Ty, the Mercury Award-nominated Nigerian-British rapper, who has recently joined up with fellow UK rap pioneers Rodney P and Black Twang to form the supergroup Kingdom. Born and raised in London, Ty is five albums deep, having first released Awkward on Big Dada in 2001, with three more since released on the Ninja Tune imprinted label. He has collaborated with De La Soul, Tony Allen, Roots Maneuver, Bahamedia, and Speech from Arrested Development. And we're sitting down with the South Londoner today. So Ty, thanks very much for taking some time out.
Absolute pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much, man. All right. So let's get straight into it. Mm-hmm. So let's start off with your musical background growing up. What's the first selection that you want to go into today?
So my musical selection, the albums that I've chosen that I think have definitely shaped my understanding of what I will do or what I was bound to do. The first album that I've got to mention is Demon Boy's Recognition. I think that was the most complete UK hip hop album of the 80s, 90s period. I think it was the most completely poignant UK record with Caribbean UK accents and a particular swagger that was, you know, that was earthbound, but also was the funk in that Recognition album was absolutely a document in regards to just how great UK hip hop could be from that era, considering they came out in the early 90s, late 80s. They are, for me, the rock point of like actually knowing a great hip hop record in regards to the DJ, the MC, and the other MC. There was it was almost like they were how you've grown to appreciate De La Soul as three individuals that make great music together. That record was an absolute benchmark for the UK in regards to how a DJ and an MC producers could make an album, a UK album, and have UK swagger over this record. If you consider these records are nearly 20 records before any Stormzy or Dizzy Rascal records, these are really the blueprints for what they would eventually do.
What do you think made that album stand out from its contemporaries around that time?
I think because people quickly, I mean, obviously I'm in a group with Rodney P, so London Posse gets mentioned. And I think London Posse were a great group. But I think album-wise, I think they were pipped to the post by the Demon Boys record. I think the Demon Boys record was just exciting in regards to the samples, the productions, the outfit. That you could tell there was a lot going on in the background of that Recognition record. There was a lot going on in Tottenham. There was a lot going on with the Twilight Firm as a production outfit, which later on would do stuff with Loose Ends. And, you know, just there was a sound going on. There was, you know, there was a real brotherhood going on that represented the kind of Black Caribbean UK hip hop experience. And I think that if you sit down and listen to their music, if you didn't grow up with it, obviously it's going to be hard, but you can't imagine what Northside sounded like as a child, hearing that song, hearing someone transforming, but it'd be funky. And someone celebrating the North Side, like the North Side, I wish there was a South Side record that represented, or an East Side record, but no UK record spoke and highlighted and celebrated an area in such a way other than their record. And that is not even the best record in the album. So there's Lyrical Culture, which is More Demon D, and his swagger. This is a lyrical culture, hear it like a vulture. Then I might insult ya. This is my lyrical culture, don't bite it like a vulture. Let me approach ya, I let my rhyme culture. Fall in the anger, I was born in Jamaica. And it's like the tone of voice and swagger that Demon D had on that record, Mike J and Demon D, they really showed me the difference between rappers rapping and rappers actually having a voice. Because I think a lot of the UK hip hop stuff that I hear now, the voices, the cadence is still a particular person's cadence. Might be Chester P or Skinny Man's cadence a lot of the times. And then you've got skills, but actually finding your voice. So there's an artist called Infinite Lives who I know from years back that has an amazing voice, a control of his voice. There's not many people that have, I think that's what makes Ty stand out in regards to my voice. I had to work at my voice. Like a lot of rappers get to a certain point and that's it, they rap. I had to rap. And then the scene came apart and nothing was going on. I had to keep rapping through that and then find my feet. So the fact that an album came out in 2001 that you can talk about and say, yeah, the Upwards album came out, you got to understand I was making records at least 15 years before that record. And that's what makes Ty, I think that's the reason why I'm still around now, because the voice and what I'm doing is so distinctly different from what other people are doing that you have to, whether you like it or not, you have to listen to a Ty record in a different space from listening to other hip hop records. And that's why I enjoy the Demon Boys record, because I think that they really showed me that you should be yourself on a record.
Okay, how did you first discover the album?
I think I discovered it via radio shows. So definitely I've got to give it up to early hip hop radio. Tim Westwood, 279, Dave Pierce, Mike Allen. Mike Allen doesn't get the shouts he deserves. Rest in peace to him. I heard it via those shows, and then, you know, you heard it, you know, then you kind of bought into it yourself and someone taped it. And I mean, I think we underestimate the power of people recording, recording from a radio onto tape and then living with that. You know, like I remember listening to Public Enemy because I recorded it off radio and just loving those songs. And even though I bought the CDs, I will never have played the music more than I did from tape. And, you know, so that's how it got digested.
Passed on to you from somebody else in school or something?
Passed
or,
on to yeah. me from recording it off radio.
Right. Dope. Okay. Any standout singles from that apart from, was it Northside that you mentioned?
Standout singles. Ooh, everything.
Yeah.
No. You see, this is the thing about the Demon Boys Recognition album, right? That was one UK hip hop album where nearly DJs played every record. The album was so great that some people even played the intro. You know, it was that great. And that's the thing that we're losing now. Obviously, DJs pick three or four singles from an album and that's what you hear. But the Demon Boys record, the Caveman record, the Hijack record, those records were records that you heard nearly every record on radio at some point via hip hop stations because the material was so good.
So would you say Demon Boys were part of the Britcore era?
No.
No, but they were time-wise, were they?
They were funkier.
Yeah.
I think they were around at the same time, but actually the Britcore thing had a particular sound, but I really think that the Demon Boys songs were funkier. The Caveman songs were funkier. They were funkier than the Britcore. The Britcore was a particular sound. And also accent-wise, we were still kind of coming away from the American accent, whereas in with the Demon Boys, they really had a UK accent over the music. You know, London Posse had a UK accent. Cash Crew had a UK accent. People had accents. People were beginning to find themselves. And that I would say that as well, because a lot of people that are listening to music now take it for granted that UK people can be into UK folks and that you'd hear UK voices. They don't know there's a lot of work that went before the Channel U period before, you know, MTV Base was playing any UK hip hop, there was artists recording music and their voices were elevating and changing. So MC Mello's voice would change via the recordings. The style would change via the recordings because people were growing up. You started something as a teenager, then you was mid-20s, and then you was in your 30s, but you're still rapping. So your voice changes because your command of your tool changes.
Okay. Dope, man. So that's the first one. Demon Boys. What's the second selection you got today?
Second selection I'm going to put out there is going to have to be It Takes a Nation of Millions, Public Enemy album.
I don't know what this world is coming to.
Yes. The rhythm, the I think that album is so important for me in regards to waking up and coming out of childhood, listening to something on the radio that would inspire me, which is hip hop. And then this group comes along and says, pay attention to this. Elvis was a hero to most, but he didn't mean shit to me. What are you saying? What's your problem with Elvis? John Wayne. My mum loves John Wayne. My mum loves Elvis. This is the first hip hop group that made me question what my peers or what my parents liked. And made me realize that, yeah, that's not going to run. That's not going to fly. In fact, yeah, John Wayne, the John Wayne and Elvis's mystique was broken for me when Public Enemy put me on notice. And I think that their music did that for a lot of people, black and white, all backgrounds. It really put us on notice. Like, oh, I didn't know that, but now I do know that. I can't back that. So, and also the funk of the It Takes a Nation of Millions album. Like to this day, if you go back and you listen to it, the levels in Bring the Noise, in Rebel Without a Pause, in Prophets of Rage, the levels and also the sample selection, A1. Like you can't study an album like that, really understand all of the things they sampled and then just go and make a mishmash. You can't do it.
For real. And I'm not sure how old you were at the time it came out. Do you feel as though you were mentally mature enough to really appreciate all of the content that was being covered on there? Or do you feel as though as you got older, it all soaked in a bit more and you listened back and it really made a bit more sense?
That album is so deep that you're still learning things from it now.
Right, right.
So, I actually sat my parents down and tried to play them that record. Now, in retrospect, you know, 20, 30 years later, I'm realizing how stupid that was to try and do that. But they got me that, the hairs on my back were so high that I actually sat my parents down and played them this record and was trying to get a response. Like, do you understand what's going on? And my parents didn't understand. But what was really important to me now, years later, is the fact that I tried to sit my parents down, because I've never tried to do that again for anything in life.
What was their response when you did?
It was meh. Right. It was all right. Okay. They could see that their son was serious about it. So they paid attention. Yeah. But they, you know, it didn't change their lives. And it shouldn't. But it definitely changed mine.
Right. On what level?
What level did it change it?
And what level, like, what in a sense, what did it mean to you apart from what you've said? Like, how did it make you perceive what you understood as the white world or the world in general, like America and kind of Western nations?
What it did, it made me realize that I had voices that didn't live in the same country as me that were speaking to me and my existence and whatever I do next. Like, there are things that I learned from that record that I can see now in everyday life, or I can see in everyday spaces and be like, oh. So I think on a Big Brother level, because the thing about hip hop music for me is it became our big brothers. And our big brothers were telling us, big brothers and sisters were telling us stuff, were making us dance, were making us enjoy ourselves. Like, we're never going to get that period back where we were dancing to stuff. Like, you know, you put they reminisce over you song on, you dance. We won't do that now. Even if you recreated the scene and put the same people in the room, They won't dance with that same excitement that they used to dance. And they gave us that. And I think now, if you take away their creativity and their creations and the effect it had on us, would we be sitting here now? I definitely wouldn't be sitting here with you if I didn't have an overwash, brain-fried moment of digital clarity in regards to what they were saying. What they were saying was more than just political, you know, white dominant mainstream culture. It was more than that. Much more than that. Like they single-handedly made me understand that I need to love funk records. Like James Brown was a big deal, but he became a bigger deal once I was in hip hop. And once you'd stand and listen to a hip hop record he made after it had been made by hip hop people. So like Eric B, I Know You Got Soul, even though that's not directly a James Brown record, the fact that you listen to that, I Know You Got Soul, and the, you know, dun, 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 all of that stuff. And then you check out The Break. It programmed all of us to understand what funk was. So you can see descriptions of Bootsy Collins explaining what funk is, and it's on the four and it's on the one, boom, boom, and you come back to the one. We were programmed with an understanding of that, to the point that I couldn't say, listening to trance, I couldn't, or any other music, I couldn't get into it if it didn't have that funk. And I think they programmed us to understand that a dirty beat or a heavy beat or a great bass line is what you want. And anything else is a failure. And I feel like, you know.
Right.
Does that make sense?
100%.
Thanks like, very you know, much. I think like Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Yeah.
Good example. Like or Fight the Power.
Yeah.
Forget the title, just the beat itself. Fight the Power. Like how that song tells you to dance. You have no choice but to skip out to Fight the Power, the beat. And the fact that people brought that to my equation, I mean, we all come from different backgrounds. Our parents all had different music collections. We could have completely gone in different directions. But I think that Public Enemy and that album and the message and the music, their choice of music, was so important and so powerful and so magnetic that I still learn things from their records now.
Brilliant, awesome. All right, so album number three.
Album number three is Midnight Marauders, Tribal Quest. I'm not going to say too much on this. I probably will, but I'm saying for a starter that I'm not going to say too much on this. I think that Midnight Marauders, when that came out, considering the albums they'd made before, which I didn't think could be bettered, I think Midnight Marauders came out at a time that I think it absolutely shifted hip-hop. I be hating sucker MCs and the sucker niggas posing like they hard when we know they damn hard. What you figure? Round wise, I do the figure eight so concisely. Musically, we are the herbs, so sit back and light me. Inhale. My style is kind of fat, reminiscent of a whale. Tribe is already shifting hip hop in regards to their production. Their production was so good compared to everyone else's that they became benchmarks in regards to their songs. And the production and just how a song should stand and how kicks and snares should be programmed. But with the Midnight Marauders album, that was just a masterclass in composition, in sample, in appreciating what could be done with jazz. Because it's not a jazzy album, but it's so jazz. In regards to the way that they manipulate samples on that record, the density of production on that record, I think beat for beat for beat for beat for beat is untouched.
So would you say it was more your selection based on the production, or do you think the rhymes matched up to the production?
I think that it moves away from both of those calculations. I think that their album, like if you only view things through beats and rhymes, then you're missing something good hip hop. Because sometimes it's the composition, as in how many people it took to make a beat, how many people it took to make a song, what the overall song is and how it feels. So what I'm trying to say is the Tribe Called Quest Midnight Marauders album is one of the hardest albums to skip from one beat to another and to say, yeah, nah, allow that. Like it, after a while in your head, you know it as A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, G, K. And sometimes you're just going to have to let it play. Mm. Or you can pick out your one tune that you like. Oh my God. But actually, if you're bored and you're, there's no better place than a motorway. When you're on a motorway, when you're driving and you've just got to get from a far distance, you put that shit on the background. Guaranteed joy. Guaranteed good conversation. Guaranteed good feelings. It's just, do you know what I'm saying? Track for track for track for track. It's one of the greatest stories as far as track listing in hip hop. It's one of the greatest stories.
Out of the songs on, out of all the great songs on there, which ones would you pick out as the ones which you would say are your favorite?
That's hard.
If not your favorite, the greatest, which is slightly different.
Slightly different. Still not a, I'm going to have to push you question-wise. That's still not good enough for me. Right. Because greatest, if I'm look, as an artist that makes albums, I know that it takes the same amount of work to do A as it does to do B and C. So your greatest work is actually an amalgamation of all these things. Like there's a kick or there's a hi-hat you took from here that you used here. There's a snare that you should have used here, but you used here. So greatest work, it would be hard for me to say.
So which of the songs you feel represent Tribe Called Quest the most on the album? Like which of the songs that you'd say, if you had to pick out three?
Oh my God, oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, record. The Steve Biko tune that's near the beginning, very strong record. Very strong record, and to call it Steve Biko as well, makes sense. Because you didn't need to call it that. You could have called it anything. But to call it Steve Biko is a way of saying, right, I've got an audience of people. You're going to learn today because I'm going to call it something and you're going to go and have to research that because you're going to still not work out because I'm not talking about Steve Biko on a record. What does that mean? Stir it up, Steve Biko. Stir it up. Stir it up. Stir it up. Steve Biko. And it's like, represent the daughter scientific with the styles I invent. A Drop Core Quest represent. See, that's responsibility for me. It's not about being conscious. It's about how do I utilize this time and space to educate without educating this new world that's listening to me all of a sudden. And how do I do it in a non-corny way? That. Steve Biko, that record. Excellent sample. It's a Bill Cosby. No, it's not a Bill Cosby sample. It's. Let me just say this. Anyone that's listened to the sample for Steve Biko will say, wow, what a great job they did. In regards, they chose the right parts and they made that work together really well. But I just think on a level of creation of a song and then to have a hook. And then, and also very important thing is with making hip hop records, right? A lot of times people rap over beats. A lot of artists nowadays, 90% of people rap over beats, but very few rap inside. And I think that there's a difference between when you get inside a record. So the horns on Steve Biko, dun-dun-dun, 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 dun, dun, dun. Now, if you do music studies, certain music will tell you certain things. Some music is like, this is the intro. Some music is, this is just the beginning. You can't loop this forever. Some things like, this is the verse. This is definitely the continuation, or a sound or a scale or a chord will tell you something that's like, oh my God, this is magnificent. This is anthemic. This is shoulder pads, or this is hung head. This is whistle to yourself. Different songs, different chords, different samples. Like when you listen to them are giving you different things, especially if you sample anything to make beats. You've got to choose. You can't choose a drum break that's really fast if you're going to chop the drums to do something that's really slow. It won't make sense because there's an intensity in the drum sound that is lost when you pitch it differently. So that's something that people don't know. That's I'm giving you tips. So it's the same in regards to understanding the music. And I feel like sometimes when I listen to a lot of hip hop, people are just rapping over a dope beat. But every now and then you hear something where it's just like, wow, that is inside. I don't even know. I can't quote to you what Q-Tip or what Fife said on that tune. But guess what? It worked.
How do you think they achieved it? What do you think they did differently from other artists that didn't achieve it?
I just think they have a different relationship with the process. What Tribe, for me, what I realized with Tribe is that they have... There is an acute nerdiness going on with them in regards to beats, the beat making process, the mixing of a record. There's a nerdiness that's going on with them that we have learned to accept as just top quality. To this day, nobody knows what the sample is for. What is the piano sample in Crooklyn?
I could look it up on whosampled.com.
You won't find it. Q-Tip's never released it. People don't know.
Okay.
Dave says it in the documentary. Come on, man. What's the sample for? Blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, this is nerdiness. But it's also a stushness. It's a little bit of a snobbery. I love it. I love it. I think hip-hop, you need to have... DJs need snobbery. You need a bit of snobbery in regards to how you know, the tunes you pick and how you hide tunes from other people and where you search for them and how much you pay. All of that is part of the process. And I think that Tribe exemplify that. They exemplify that in regards to their sample choices, their production choices for the early stuff and what they're able to achieve. And that's before Dilla comes involved. So, you know, sometimes we don't give them enough credit. We give the credit to Dilla now. But really, they were making incredible music before Dilla came.
Okay. That's dope, man. All right, thanks very much. That's three dope albums that you guys need to check out. You need to listen to it. You need to do your homework. Take Ty's recommendations. And now we're going to move on to the second half of this podcast recording, where we're going to go into your own back catalog. And you've chosen three songs, perhaps not your most famous songs, which is an interesting... a direction to take.
I did that for a reason.
For real? You think outside the box, you're that kind of artist.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the first one, which you went for.
I chose Little Star. And the reason why I chose all of these songs is because people don't do enough research. Like, people are very kind of Spotify or what tune did the DJ play? That's how I might know Ty stuff. It's like, I will say this now. It's my advert. I pay as much attention to making the whole album as I do one song. So for the fact that a DJ plays one song from mine, he's cheating you and you're cheating yourself if you don't go and check the records. So what I've done is, so there's focus on different songs because I feel there are different songs that have been missed or people didn't appreciate what was happening at the time. So the first song, Little Star, is a song where I think I rap five verses. Raise an eyebrow. The Hawks hover ever ready for the right crowd. Locked eyes on the target, then they swoop right down. Folks, if you're ready, let me know right now. All my people say, oh, folks say, oh, fellas say, oh, ladies say, oh, ha, that's all I need for the minute. Junkies need crack, pop, I need spinach. Don't worry about Ty, I'm straight. I'll be on the dime. But the process is different, so Twinkle little star, the Sasquatch is here. So I'm rapping to a beat, and then it gets back to a chorus, and the chorus only goes around once. So it's like rap, 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 rap. Twinkle little star, rap, 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 rap. Twinkle little star, rap, 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 rap. So I'm really going. It's definitely get it off your chest, smash the ping pong bat across the table type motions as far as energy. But it's also not really relying on the radio format of you need a hook to be a certain way, you need a verse, you need this. I'm like, yo, I'm going for that. I'm on that song, I'm going for it. And I'm rapping in my way. I find a way to rap interestingly enough without, and this is the thing, I don't say it much on podcast. The difference with Ty is I try to find a way to rap sexily, aggressively, without having to resort to your mum or the kind of ego thing of I'm better than you, but I might use a lyrical violence reference that I've learned from the States. So I try to unstrap all of the kind of usual rap cadences that rappers follow. So whether it's that whole kind of I'm better than you, but I'm just going to tell you this way, or you know, I got lyrics and you know, da 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 da, and you know, if you bar me, you know, I might scar you, I might hit you with the da da, I might shoot you with a lyrical guy, or I might, you know, people can't help but use these types of metaphors when they rap, even when they freestyle. I'm absolutely not doing that on record. So most of my records, I find a way to rap and engage you and say something without doing this typical thing of, at some point, I must suggest that your life is threatened. Even if it's in play, or because that's all I know. And that's what most rappers know. And I've found a way all these years to not do that without saying I'm not doing that, if that makes sense. So that's really the importance of Little Star.
All right. And who was on the production of that track?
I produced that.
You produced it?
Yeah.
So did you produce a lot of your own music?
All of it.
All of your own music. Wow. Okay, I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I'm talking about production and stuff.
Yeah, like. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I produce it. I co-produce with Drew Hawley, but I produce the records and then someone comes in and works with me or makes sure that, you know, sonically it's right, because I don't handle Logic, but I do handle the MPC and stuff. So that's how it works.
All right, dope. And that's from the album Awkward Fool?
That is Special Kind of Fool. Special Kind of Fool, yes. There is an album called Awkward as well.
Sorry, mix up. So that's from the album Special Kind of Fool. How did that track sit within the context of the rest of the album? Like, what did it stand out as a different kind of track? Was it?
It stands out for me because there's the songs that are, that Emotions is the, I think, the single, the radio single. Then there's songs like Something Big, which could have been a bigger crossover radio song with Carol Thompson on there. There's different types of stories, things on there. There's different types of records. But for me, Little Star was absolutely like an absolute quick sparring session that people are not used to getting from me. So people are used to, oh yeah, Ty, you're this type of person, aren't you? People are very, Ty is someone that people have said is a particular thing rather than me actually be it. And I've had to live with that. So yeah, Ty's kooky, Ty's different, Ty's alternative, Ty's conscious. I'm not none of these things. But actually, this is what people perceive you to be when you're not doing the particular, the regular thing. Or when you, so from when you've taken swear words out, from when you don't threaten to punch someone in their mouth, you're different. You're not normal. Which says hip hop normally is this, which is not true. So yeah, that's what I like about Little Star. It just has a little bit of a vibe that you have, that people, I feel DJs didn't pick up on.
Dope. Okay. Next one you've gone for is Groovement off the album Upwards.
Yeah, Groovement is, I think, the second single after the Wait A Minute single. Groovemen is a single that if you see that in a shop, you buy that. Don't try to come back for it tomorrow. That record is sold out. That record's been sold out from the year it was made. Like it floated around a little bit. Come on.
Pain. Step up on stage and wrap it off. Twist head with lyrics and slowly snap them off. Lyrics like a corner, got to see them to crack them off. If you're calling in the morning, no words, baby, just back them off. Music on my mind, NPC, just tap them off. Snakes in the garden, if I catch them, I slap them off. Vibe is stupendous, talk to Drew to track them off. Write it down and produce it, distribute it and rack them off. How's that?
And that's the thing I'm really proud of. Like, the records don't hang around. They're not charity shop standards. But Groovemen was a very special record because I was watching and observing and a part of the broken beat, the new jazz scene, because obviously I moved with musicians and I was aware of different things that were going on. I moved with theatre producers, big up to Benji Reed, and I was really aware of the clever side of some of the UK progressive music that was going on, other than the house stuff. And the broken beat was coming through, the acid jazz had already come through. Watching people dance to your music or different styles of music made me aware that, okay, as a hip hop person, you don't think about it, but just make sure you don't have to. As a hip hop person, I've never watched my community and thought, I need to fit into you. I'm like, I'm part of you. I live here, but I'm wearing a bowler hat today, walking through Brixton. Why are you doing that? Because I can. Because I'm me. I'm comfortable with me. If I want to wear slippers, I'll do that. I'm not saying if I want to wear a tutu, I'm going to do that. But what I am saying is my journey is music. My journey as far as being a black man growing up in the UK is, yo, I had to find myself real quick. And I had to find a way to be myself. So therefore, this music process has to be part of me. And Nick, I'll say this. When I study the greatest artists of anything, there's an element of themselves that's really in the music. So some of the greatest artists that have existed vocally, there's a presence in them where they didn't sit behind the music. They sat atop of a mountain with a title of their music next to them, and they just, this is me, Marvin Gaye. Get used to this. Me lying down while I'm recording. Get used to this. That's what I'm doing. ODB, The Voice, Guru, Voices. So with Groovemen, what I tried to do was talk about this thing, this energy, this need to be funky, but make hip hop music. And I do believe that Groovemen is a special record. It's very it's appreciated in the broken beat world, on dance floors around the world, but also in the hip hop world. And at the time, a lot of hip hop heads were like, it's not a straightforward loop. It's not da da da. And it's like, you know, now people perceive that record as a masterpiece because of, you know, how we chop the samples. And what I was trying to do with the sample was I liked things like Voodoo Ray. And just the house stuff of the but I couldn't see it done in a hip hop way. So what I did with Groovemen, is me making hip hop without waiting for Premiere to do it first. Does that make sense? So a lot of UK hip hop, to me, a lot of hip hop has a thing of, well, is it Premiere enough? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I'm totally not waiting for Premiere to slap me on the back in regards to the music choices that I was making. And it's funny because he came, he heard Like You Never. And next thing I know, I get summoned to the studio. He's like, I need to know who made this record. So we meet, exchange numbers, talked about possibly doing music. But, you know, I'm not really too worried about whether we do music. But what I will say is, with De La Soul and with Premiere and with certain people, it's nice when certain people or artists that you look up to see you and see what you're doing as dope. And, you know, like Maceo from De La Soul changed my life because he thoroughly got it. And he's like, you come here and we're still tight. You know, outside of music, we're tight. Family, tight. And what he taught me was I could be from the UK, but be absolutely the same type of nerd that they are about music and be respected. And to this day, I'll never get the same appreciation that I get from Maceo from the UK. Never. Never. It's never been the case. Like what he showed me, my man put me on a plane and made me stay there for 2 months. No, it was a month.
Where?
It was the month that Princess Diana died. I made music. I was in and out of the studios. I was in New York. I was in the studio when Mos Def made Umi Says.
Wow.
I was there. I saw him when he did that. I'm not going to write this down. I was there. I watched him. He did not look at the paper. He just went for it. I saw that.
How did you feel watching it?
I felt like I was supposed to be there. Like, and I've had multiple movements. I was in the same room with De La Soul when they made Feel Good with Gorillaz. I was out there. I was part of that session. I saw it. I saw it happen. I saw Dave. They were working on a tune for Poz. They did that. They kind of moved on. Then they played this beat. Dave was like, what's that? Oh, played it again. Next thing he knows, let me write to that. Next thing I know, that song happens. You know, guys. When he starts, I saw all of that. Before it happened, I saw it happen. And I would say this, I'm supposed to see those things. And a lot of artists are supposed to see those things. And I think sometimes we consider ourselves to be in some sort of relegated division of creativity.
British?
Yeah. I think we often assume we were only going to see certain things at certain levels, but I've been seeing things for so long. I've been in rooms where it's just been idols and legends in the room and they don't know that I'm not one of them. They just, I'm with somebody and they don't know. So I'm, you know.
So your first album dropped in 2001. You've been around a lot longer. Huh?
The first official album dropped in 2001. But I put out the China Shorty Blitz EP in 97. And then I'd already featured on IG Culture's first album in 1990. And I'd traveled with Blade and toured the whole of Europe in 1992 or 3.
Wow. Okay.
So I've been seeing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Been seeing stuff. And that's why The Voice, as far as MCs, a lot of times MCs write their lyrics and they get to a certain point and they think they're nice. And what they haven't realized is there's still more hurdles to jump in regards to you eventually finding your real voice. And I think that's why my voice sounds unique versus others, is because I was allowed to take that journey a bit longer. A lot of MCs now just they just feel they've graduated. There's more rooms to investigate, but they don't do it. It's just, well, I'm here now. I'm great.
So did you purposely wait a long time at being an artist before releasing your first album, or is that just how things panned out?
It's how things panned out. I definitely didn't wait for it, but I definitely think that it was the climate. So the it's funny that the UK hip hop story's not really been told properly. So there's certain things that nobody talks about, the period where it was like when everybody jumped to jungle and rave and people left hip hop, and you had to be a diehard person to pick up yourself to go to a hip hop gig that might have 10 people in it, have five. For a number of years, it was like this.
What years are we talking?
I would say maybe 94-5 onwards. There was a period. I remember when Brotherhood was signed, and then when Darkman was signed, and then after that period. Those are the signposts. If you look after that period, there's a period where record companies were not signing hip-hop, were not fucking with hip-hop, nobody was interested in hip-hop. And I existed going to hip-hop jams, doing stuff at that time. And I think that was the training ground for finding your voice because you had no option. Either you gave up on the music or you gave up because there was nobody in the venue, or you just continue to love this thing. And I think that that's been my that's been my journey. So it's interesting, every time when people talk about 2001, the story is Will Ashon signed me because he did an interview with me for a magazine that he was involved in. So I was already out and existing, doing my small bits. And then he was like, well, I'm on this label. I think I'm, you know, I just put out New Testament, Roots Maneuver. I'm going to do this. So you can come over here. And then I came over there, and the rest is history. But I didn't come into the door as a new artist.
Yeah.
I came into the door as an artist that had already, was already big enough to be interviewed for that then to happen, if that makes sense. So that's kind of what it was.
Dope. Okay, thanks. Final track that you're selecting for today is Expectations, which was a bonus track on Upwards.
Yes. The reason why I've selected that tune is because sometimes hip-hop records are tracks people write on. Like I was telling you about, there is, you know, there's more to tracks than just rapping the song and rapping the hook and releasing it and mixing it and mastering it. Sometimes it depends on the day you record it. You might do something on Wednesday you would never have done on Tuesday, right? And I think that Expectations is a great example of moment records. So the Expectation record, I don't know if you play it or whether people get a link to hear it, but Expectation record is really the tale part two. And the tale was me telling a story about meeting a fan and her checking me out and me checking her out and then things happening. But it was kind of playfully, lovingly constructed. It's definitely a moment in time we did song. Expectations is me telling that story or a similar story, but almost on drugs. So my accent is different. So I have a kind of, I haven't decided what the nationality is of the person, but it's almost like an Italian stroke Nigerian. Like I find there's something there with the, you know what I mean? I come to tell you. Da, 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 da. And it's like, there's something intrinsically African and intrinsically European, Italian about the voice when I'm doing this particular character. And what I really like about the song is it's a moment. It's like, you can do that. You know, like as rappers, we're way too serious, but you actually can rap in a voice that you playfully play with and record it and do it. And the whole basis of when I'm in the studio and doing that is to make everyone else in the room laugh. And when I did this song, it had Drew burning up. He was burning up in the control room.
This one goes out to my special pumpkin. Funky pumpkin. Alright. She told me she loved me. Yes, she did. Talked about marriage. We talked about kids, house and mortgage, dog and cat. Forget the last two, huh? I don't know about that.
Because he just didn't know what was coming. Because I won't spoil the punchline for you, but it's in this cis transgender world that we're living in now, there is excerpts where it kind of suggests that things change. People are not who they say they are. And it's too late. So jokingly, it's kind of fun on that level. But production wise, we was doing the skipping thing. Had Suwesi on the hook, who'd just come off tour with me doing the Upward stuff. It was just a song that came together on that day and made absolute sense. And I haven't played it in years, but I definitely think that that was a benchmark for me of understanding the difference between just making songs and then letting songs happen naturally. So saxophone player might come along 5 years later and play the right thing, and you're like, oh, that's what it needs to be. So expectations for me is a kind of celebratory reminder to have fun whilst making music, and you'll enjoy that. People will enjoy that.
So how come you made it a bonus track as opposed to a track?
Because it was made after the album. So the album had already come out, and then when there was an opportunity to put something on the record to make it a bonus, we attached it. But it had already been made. We'd made it after we'd finished doing the Upwards album, and then we slipped it in to the bonus package when the first album sold out, because it's the first album sold out. Okay. The second album sold out, so we had to repress, and then we had to repress because of the Mercury Awards, because that made it triple into the thousands in regards to what it sold. So they had to press that again.
Wow, that's dope. That's been a proud moment, man, to be able to do that.
Definitely.
And which of your albums would you say you're most proud of if you had to pick one? I know it's hard to say.
It is absolutely impossible. So it's impossible because they're all your children.
And that's what rappers say, right?
They really are. Yeah. Like, you know, also making an album is like against all odds finishing this thing.
Yeah.
It's like, what's your favorite exam? What's your favorite exam result? What's your favorite thing that you got because you had that exam result? So the results of Upwards, the results of Awkward, are the reason why I could make Upwards. Upwards is on paper the greatest album I've made, but the results of Upwards enabled me to have the guest that I had on Special Kind of Closer. The results of Closer enabled me to have it. The results of Closer and Special Kind of Fool have enabled me to still to this day be able to have an album and people be interested in it, because Ty makes great albums. Ty might not be your favorite rapper, but Ty makes great albums. Like, your favorite rapper in the UK versus how many albums that Ty's made that people are interested in, it's one can't overlap the other. If that makes sense.
100%, man. Okay. And moving into some current work of yours. We're going to get into the current music you're promoting, which is, of course, Kingdom.
Yes.
So out of the songs which are maybe made available to the public before the album fully released, tell me which one you're going to go for.
I'm going to go for Just Saying. Just Saying was fun to do. Just Saying was written in a way we were all in a room. And I went first to put my vocal down. And I just remember the look on Tony Black Twang and Rodney's face when I laid that verse down. They were like, oh. Because, you know, respectfully, they're the premiers. They're the ones that people are like, yeah, it's Tony, it's Rodney, maybe Ty. So with that record, there was a little bit like, oh, this brother's trying to blow us out the water. And it was friendly, it was fun, it was competitive, but I just loved that song and what I was able to put into that verse. So I think I'm rapping, let me see. I'm going to need to boogie the... Yeah, I remember saying stuff. So I remember Bunny, I mentioned Bunny Rabbit, the TARDIS. I mentioned De La Soul, Saturday... roller skating, cover your knees. I'm mentioning all of that in a few seconds. And Tony says to me, he always says, I don't know how you pick one thing out of the air, then you go over here, then you go over here. Like, bro, I don't get it. I don't get how you, it's only you that does that. And I'm just like, I think that's a good representation of Ty in the Kingdom project.
Dope. Okay. Something I've always wondered, where does the name come from?
Ty. So the name comes from, it's my street name. And it comes from, even my mum calls me it sometimes now. It's crazy. It comes from the Tyrannosaurus Rex and Rock Me Amadeus, the song. So when I was a child, I was really a fan of Lakim Shabazz's name. So I was like, Tyson Amadeus. Rock Me Amadeus, Anais. Tyson Amadeus. So it was me mispronouncing tsunami. Sorry, not Tyrannosaurus. So tsunami. So you know how tsunami, it's silent. It's almost like there's a silent T in tsunami. It came from that. So it was like, I was Tyson Amadeus Anais. So I was trying to be, it's like a tsunami with a surname. And then we cut the surname down. I did a rap competition for Max and Dave, and I was on stage and it was live on air. And he must have asked me what my name is. And I said, Tyson Amadeus. And he's like, huh? Next up's Ty. Then I did the thing, didn't think about it again. And then I think someone walked down the street and was like, in West End, actually, someone was like, yo, you're Ty, right? I was like, yeah, I guess I am. And then from that moment, that was it.
Top. All right, on that note, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Ty, for taking absolute time pleasure. Out for Six of the Best, man. Appreciate you spreading your history, spreading your legacy onto this podcast, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And last off, any words to your fans that might be keen to hear some more solo material from Ty?
Yep, solo material is coming up. I'm looking at an instrumental album. I feel like that's what I want to do right now. Follow me on social media. So on Instagram, it's Ty Musical. On Twitter, it's Ty Music. Or you can follow my Facebook, or you can follow the website, tymusic.co.uk, for any updates. And let's keep it moving.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, man. Peace and love.
Peace.
Six of the Best, the original podcast series by Blatantly Blunt, only on Kiki.